We were talking last time about the fundamentals of muktzah, and we spoke about the six different categories of muktzah. The first thing that we got through was what was it? Anybody remember? The first category that we spoke about was muktzah machmas chisaron kis, which is considered to be the most stringent, the most serious category of muktzah. So now we're going to move on to the second, which is what we refer to as a kli shemalachto le'iser. So the Shulchan Aruch, yeah?
Just in general, why is that considered the most, the greatest?
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. But in descending order, that's the way it is in Shulchan Aruch. I don't know. Good question. So the next category that we speak about is a kli shemalachto le'iser. What is a kli shemalachto le'iser? The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, Kuf Chav Dalet, that a kli shemalachto le'iser is an item, a utensil, which is normally used to perform something that is not allowed to be done on Shabbos. So a primary example of that would be what? A pen, a pencil, right? What you normally use a pen or a pencil for on any day of the week is to write. Since on Shabbos you're not allowed to write, that would be a kli shemalachto le'iser. What happens if I leave my pen or pencil on the table, and now I want to set the table? So the Shulchan Aruch says, well, given that this is not the most severe category of muktzah, this is one step down, we're going to have certain leniencies that apply to this category. For example, Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to move it l'tzarech gufo or l'tzarech mekomo. What does l'tzarech gufo mean? L'tzarech gufo means if I have this item, a pencil was a bad example for that, but let's say I have a hammer. That's the example that the Shulchan Aruch gives. If I have a hammer, what is a hammer 99% of the times used for? To bang a nail into the wall, which is a malacha on Shabbos, and therefore this would be a kli shemalachto le'iser. However, every once in a 100 years, I use a hammer to crack a nut. It's not the norm, it's not what I usually use, but every so often I do use it for that. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch says, if l'tzarech gufo, if I need the hammer to crack open a nut, I would be allowed to handle it on Shabbos, because I'm not using it for a purpose which is prohibited, I'm using it for a purpose which is permissible. That is one way to get around the problem of the hammer issue. So say, for example, I left a hammer on the table, and I really don't want it to be here, so I can take a nut out from the cabinet, and I can use the hammer to smash the nut open and be able to take out its content. Yeah?
Would you be allowed to have a hammer? Like, if you've never opened a nut with a hammer before, are you allowed to do that
Yes, that's an excellent question. The answer is yes. However, the Mishnah Berurah says it's only if you don't have the other instrument available that you normally would use. So yes, even though I never do it this way, and in fact, I never actually eat nuts. But if I want to do that, that would be okay, as long as, provided that I don't have the other thing. Now, what does that mean, provided I don't have the other thing? I can knock on the neighbor's door and get it. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, no, you don't have to go that far. If around the kitchen you don't have the other thing that's going to help you open up the nut, that would be a sufficient reason for you to use this hammer, and that would be permissible. That's dispensation number one that we give for carrying a kli shemalachto le'iser and handling it on Shabbos. Dispensation number two that we give is if you have something where you need it l'tzorech mekomo. If I need it, I need this space. What does it mean, I need this space? I need this space means I'm trying to set the table for Shabbos, and now I realize that I forgot to clear it off from this item. So I have a hammer at somebody's seat. That would be a problem, and therefore we would say that l'tzorech mekomo, I would be allowed to move it. So then when does muktzah apply? When would you not be allowed to move the hammer? Under which circumstances would we say this is not allowed to be handled on Shabbos? So the Shulchan Aruch says there's a third category, which is mechama l'tzel. If I left it outside, and I'm afraid it's going to be rained on, and as a result of the rain, it's going to get rusty, and the whole thing's going to get ruined, and the only reason why I'm moving it now is not because I want to use it to crack open a nut, and not because I want to use it in order to clear off the table which I need to set for other people who are coming to the house, but rather I'm doing it only mechama l'tzel, which means from sunlight and bring it into the shade. If that is the only reason why I'm moving this, that would be prohibited. That would be something I'm not allowed to do. Okay, so that's the general rule. Now, how do you define a kli shemalachto le'iser? Generally, we assume, the Shulchan Aruch writes, it goes by what the main usage of this item actually is. That is what defines a kli shemalachto le'iser. So let's take a great example. If I have a pot, what would you say? What category is a pot in? A pot is a kli shemalachto le'iser. Why? Because the main usage of a pot is to cook. Now, It so happens that every so often you use a pot also to store food in your house in the fridge, but that's not really the main purpose of a pot. So a pot is a kli shemalach to le'iser. If I have a pot that is filled with food on Shabbos, does that mean I'm not allowed to move it around? Not a trick question. You're allowed to move it around. Why are you allowed to move it around? That didn't work. Because it's tarach makomo. I need this, right? The contents of it are stuck. And therefore now, when it's filled with food, I assume that this would not be considered mukta. Let me just go through a few more examples, then we'll get to it. One mistake that people often make is they don't know the next line in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, although it's true that you're allowed to move, let's say, the hammer because it's tarach makomo, because I have to set the table, or because I want to use it for the nut, or whatever it may be, when we have an allowance to use a hammer or to move a kli shemalach to le'iser, people often mistakenly think that I have to take it somewhere and then drop it. Shulchan Aruch says no. It's called a tilta arach. Once you have a permission to move something that is otherwise going to be mukta, you're allowed to move it to wherever you want to move it, and then you put it down. So you don't just go to the first empty room and say, oh, let me drop it here. No, you can bring it back to the closet where it belongs, to the drawer upstairs where it belongs, whatever it may be, and that would not be a problem at all. Now, how do you define what is considered the tzorach makomo? I gave an example, which is, if I'm trying to set the table and I have a hammer in the way, so what are you going to do? You have a hammer in the way, you can't set the table. So that's called the tzorach makomo. Shmir Shabbos Kachasa writes that if you need the space where the mukta is currently located, that's called the tzorach makomo. Now, what happens if I don't need the space, but I'm just embarrassed that this is there? For example, we have a living room, and we have 10 seats on the couch in the living room. Do I need every one of the seats on the couch? No. Or I have a big dining room table, and I'm not going to have the whole table full for Shabbos. I have a couple of guests coming. So I could leave this seat blank. It's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing for me to have that. It shows that I really didn't prepare for Shabbos properly. It shows that I really did not do what I was supposed to beforehand. So would I be allowed to move it? Is that called tzorach makomo because I'm embarrassed by the fact that it's there? Says the Shmir Shabbos Gechasa, no, that's not called the tzorach makomo. That's called for my own tzorach. And to the contrary, Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva where he says that that's not a bizayon to Shabbos, that's a kavod Shabbos. By showing people that I left the hammer on the table, you're showing them how much respect you have for Shabbos, that even though it's embarrassing that you're going to walk into my house and I have a hammer on the table, and it looks a little clumsy, and it looks like I really didn't prepare, not a problem, because it's Shabbos. And I respect Shabbos so much, I wouldn't do it. Now, I would obviously be allowed to move it al yedei, like what we said the other week, right? That was what you said about the tablecloth, right? So I could pick up the whole tablecloth, move it aside. That would be a tiltum min hatzad. That would be permissible. But what we're talking about here is, let's say if you have the hammer and you're afraid that if you're going to push it off the table in an indirect fashion, it's going to break the floor or it's going to do some damage somewhere. So obviously, I wouldn't want to do that. Rav Moshe has an interesting tshuva. What happens if I'm in my house, in my room, and I have a portable lamp in my room? Now, before they had the fancy Shabbos lamps where you can turn it. So I have a lamp, and the problem is I can't sleep with the lights on. So what do I do? So let's try to think about it. A lamp is what? Mukta machmas chisaron kis or a klisha malach to le'iser? A lamp is a klisha malach to le'iser. It's not so expensive. It's $25, not so expensive. So a lamp is a klisha malach to le'iser. What is the intent of the lamp? To do a malacha, to turn on the light, to turn on the lights on in the room. Would I be allowed to move it because I want to go to sleep? Rav Moshe says yes. Why? That's called tzorach makomo. It's a different extension of tzorach makomo. It's basically saying, I need the space. What do you mean? But you don't need to sleep where the lamp is. But Rav Moshe says, no, because I want to go to sleep, this is basically the same as the case where I want to sit down by a table and this is at my space where I want to sit. That's called tzorach makomo. So too, Rav Moshe says, it's as if the lamp is taking up the whole room. And I need the lamp to be out of the way in order to make use of this room. And therefore, he says, you'd be allowed to move it. And the same would go for an alarm clock. If let's say I have an alarm clock going, I have my cell phone rings, and it's really getting in the way of my ability to sleep. So I'd be allowed to move it. That's also called the tzorach makomo. I'd be allowed to move it to another room because I want to have the ability to make use of this room. And this cell phone is getting in the way of my ability to use this makom. So that's a chiddush. That's a very interesting chiddush. But it's one that comes up, I think, all the time. Now, again, obviously, If you have another room where you can comfortably go to sleep, or you have another possibility, so then don't touch it. But if you don't, right, if you're just stuck in this situation and you really have difficulty, or you project that you'll have difficulty sleeping, you would be allowed to move it. Now again, the Mishnah Berurah says, the only time we say letzarof gufo, you're allowed to move it. Tzarof gufo means, as we said, that you want to use it to crack a nut. Tzarof makomo means I need the space. Mishnah Berurah says the only time I'd be allowed to do that is if I actually don't have a nutcracker in my kitchen. But if I have the other item, which I can just as easily get, and I'm choosing to do this just because I know that it's the only way to move it off the table, that would not be permissible on Shabbos. Questions? Yeah.
Yeah, let's say like the other way, you have like a portable lamp, but it's like too far from where you want to sit, so you can't see the light. Are you allowed to move it for that purpose?
Ah, meaning the other direction. It's not light enough. Why? Let's try to think. Why would it be? Why should it be allowed?
Well, I felt like let's say you have a, I don't know. I mean, I think it's not allowed also, but I just want to double check. Like, you know, like the Shabbos lamp that you can like bend mm-hmm. the top of it. Like it says on the box that you can bend the top, but you can't move the
base. Can't move the bottom. Uh huh.
But yeah. So I want to double check.
Yeah. Right? I don't think it fits into either of the categories we said.
Tzarof gufo?
It's tzarof gufo, but...
area more usable. More
it's tzarof gufo...
The purpose of the lamp is to provide light.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know. I have to look that up.
Like, what do you say? That, like, you want that half of the room to be more light? Is it tzarof gufo, or is that just the other half?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. Is that what it says on the box? You can bend the top, just not the bottom?
You can twist the top. There are two kinds. There's the reading light variety, and then there's the twisty top variety.
Right. Uh-huh. I don't know. I'll have to look that up. That's a good question.
I don't know. I could be wrong.
Something, yeah.
No, sorry.
It's okay. Well, the phone, we said last week, it's not so clear that it's Muktzeh Machmas Lisaron Kis, right? That's what I think you said last week. The first 2 weeks that you have the phone, is that correct?
Yeah.
First 2 weeks that you have the phone, it is Muktzeh Machmas Lisaron Kis. And then after that, you start throwing it around, everyone's playing with it, and we're not as careful. So then it becomes a Klisha Melachta Laser, right?
When yeah. Would you have to use a
Shiva? No. No, you'd be allowed to, because you have a heter tiltul. You have an allowance to move it. Yeah. We're going to get to that.
Oh.
Give me a minute. Yeah. Questions? Okay, let me just give an example. What I find to be a very surprising example. What category would you put a car into? What? I thought a car should be Muktzeh Machmas Chisaron Kis. It's probably the most expensive item that a lot of people own, other than their house, right? So, on the other hand, the Svarim argue, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others say, it's called a Klisha Malachta L'Isser. Why? Because you use a car for many different purposes. You use a car to drive, and you use a car to do all kinds of things in the car, and therefore they say it would be a Klisha Malachta L'Isser, which is surprising, but interesting. Now, what happens, and again, I don't love this example because it's not really relevant with the cars we have today. It could be it was relevant 50 years ago when this tshuva was written. But he says, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in the Shmir Shabbos Kechasa, what happens if I left, you know, my challahs in the car? So what do I do? Why is it not relevant today? Because every time you open the door, the lights are going to go on anyway. So that's a malacha, that's a problem. So leaving that aside, let's say some cars you can deactivate that. I don't know why you would have deactivated that. But let's say you have a car that doesn't have that issue involved in opening the door. So I left the Shabbos food in the car. So what do I do? So the Shmir Shabbos Kechasa argues, since a car is a Klisha Malachta L'Isser, what's the halacha by a Klisha Malachta L'Isser? When am I allowed to handle it? When it's Tzarach Makomo. Is this called Tzarach Makomo? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, yes. Why? Because this is in the way of my stepping into the car. I need to get into the car to get the food out. If the car doors were open, I would just go and take it out. This is in my way. So it's Tzarach Makomo. Therefore, I'm allowed to open the car door. Okay? Again, that's only saying when you have a car that the lights aren't going to go on. Then says Rav Shlomo Zalman, what about closing the car door after you're finished? Would you be allowed to? Yes. Why yes? Why yes? Because he says, now it's Tzarach Mekomo because I want to walk on my driveway. And I want to walk on the sidewalk. If I'm going to have a car door open, then everybody who walks by my house is going to have to take a detour to move around the car doors that are open. That's called Tzarach Mekomo. So again, it's Tzarach Mekomo in both ways. It's Tzarach Mekomo to open the car door because that's standing in my way of getting inside of the car and getting my food. It's Tzarach Mekomo to close it again. Why? Because I now have to go around the car door in order to walk down the street, in order to walk down the sidewalk, and therefore that would be considered something that would be permissible, which I think is a very interesting chiddush and very important to know as well. The same would apply, for that matter, when we're talking about a dryer or a washing machine. Let's say you forgot to take out your shirt from the dryer or whatever, some kind of item that you need, some socks, so you have them in the dryer. So if you have a dryer where the light goes on right away, obviously that's a problem. But let's say you don't have that kind of dryer and you open up the dryer and the light is not going to go on. Would I be allowed to open it on Shabbos to get out a clean article of clothing that I want to get out? What's the answer? Well, what is a dryer? What is a washing machine? What is a dryer? It's a kli shemelachto le'iser. So it's a kli shemelachto le'iser. I'd be allowed to move it the tzarach makomo. Is this called the tzarach makomo? That's the same what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, that if I need to get something that's inside, and the only way to get through it is to open the door, and right now the door is in my way, then it's a tzarach makomo to move the door out of the way. Okay, now that I open the door, now what about closing it? Same thing. Anyone who's going to walk by the laundry room, now if your laundry room is downstairs and no one ever walks by it anyway, that's fine. Then you shouldn't close it. But let's say your laundry room is in a location where people are walking by, then this is going to be in the way. If I keep the door open, everyone's going to have to walk around the door. So the tzarach makomo would dictate that I'm allowed to close it the same way I was allowed to open it as well. A more common example is the dishwasher door. What is a dishwasher? Kli shemalachto le'iser. Am I allowed to load the dishwasher on Shabbos? Ah. I don't want to ask, what do you all do at home? Okay. Am I allowed to load the dishwasher on Shabbos? Now, I'm certainly not allowed to run the dishwasher on Shabbos. And let's say again, if any lights are going to light up when I open the dishwasher, obviously that's not what we're describing here. That would be automatically a problem. But let's say you have one of the older dishwashers that the lights do not go on and nothing happens when you open the door and you have to activate it in order for the system to start running. Would I be allowed to load the dishwasher on Shabbos or not? What are the potential issues involved in loading a dishwasher? Hachana is the most obvious issue, which is you're not allowed to prepare from Shabbos to the weekday. So in terms of Hachana, you need to ask yourself the following question. Why am I loading the dishwasher? Am I loading the dishwasher because I want to make my Matzah Shabbos, my Saturday night, a little bit easier, and I want to run out to do whatever I'm doing, and therefore I don't want to be bothered with 20 minutes of having to load the dishwasher right after Shabbos. So you know what? Let me do it on Shabbos itself. That would be Hachana. But if you're the kind of person that just simply does not like dirty dishes around the kitchen, and the reason you're loading up the dishwasher has nothing to do with the fact that you want to run it the minute Shabbos is over, but rather because I just don't like to have a mess around my house, and I'd like to get it out of the way immediately, then my loading the dishwasher is not because I'm preparing for after Shabbos, but rather because I want to enhance my experience of Shabbos right now. And that would be permissible. But the other obstacle you need to get around is muktzah. A dishwasher is a kli shemalachta le'iser. The only thing you use a dishwasher for is to do malacha, to heat up the water and to clean the dishes. So that would be a problem seemingly. So how do you get around it? The same thing we just said. You're allowed to open the door of the dishwasher because that is considered the tzarach mekomo. Why is it the tzarach mekomo? Because I want to get into the racks. This door is in my way. I have to move the door out of the way in order to get in. Now, what about closing the door of the dishwasher? Same thing. If I'm going to have the dishwasher door open, inevitably someone in my family is going to trip over it and get hurt. And therefore we assume the same way you'd be allowed to open it, you'd also be allowed to close it as well. Yeah, question.
If your washer or dryer, let's say it was broken, would you be able to open and close it on topics as you wanted for fun?
Just for fun?
Yeah.
If your washer or dryer was broken.
So you can't use it for malacha.
I mean, let's say in my house, we have broken phones. That anyone in your house still have landlines, right?
Yeah.
Some old houses still have landlines. Mm-hmm. So we have some of the phones that don't work anymore, and the kids play with them on Shabbos.
Right?
Because now it turns into a toy, but a dishwasher is not the same. I think a dishwasher was never a toy.
But then what if it's off? Because if it's off, you're not going to be using the steam lava.
So then it's a different category of mukta. What would it be? I see someone erased. Someone erased our learning from last week. Okay. That would be a different category of mukta. What would that be? Mukta machmas gufo. It has no purpose on Shabbos at all. That's like eitzim ba'avana v'yafar. That's like dirt that has no purpose either. Is that from here? Okay. Yeah.
More for the car example, but would that be an issue of Mars eye if I was going to my car again? Assuming the light doesn't go.
Hmm. Would that be an issue of Maris Ayin? Would that be an issue of Maris Ayin? Maris Ayin means when I'm doing something that can be misunderstood. People who see me doing this will think that I'm doing something wrong. Now there's two parts of Maris Ayin. There's Chashad and Maris Ayin. It's actually two different sugyas in the Gemara. Two different Gemaras talk about different angles of Maris Ayin. One says the concern of Maris Ayin is that other people are going to see me and judge me unfavorably. They're going to think that I'm doing something wrong. The second aspect, the second dimension of Maris Ayin is someone's going to watch me doing this and they're going to learn and do the same. Now, they don't know that my circumstance is different and that's why I'm doing this and there's no light going on. So Maris Ayin in general is a little bit of a complicated issue because how do you draw the line on Maris Ayin? What is considered something that is a reasonable concern and what is not? So let me give you an example. An example would be, let me just formulate it for a second. The example would be, we know there's a prohibition in Chumash of having wool and linen woven together. It's called shatnez. Okay, so you're not allowed to have wool and linen woven together. So the Rush, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, says, well, what about having silk and linen woven together? What would you say? Of course it's okay. Why not? Why wouldn't it be okay? Silk is not wool. They have no connection at all. So the Rosh says, no, you have a problem because people don't understand the difference between all the fabrics. And therefore the Rosh says that silk and linen, I'm sorry, I'm making a mistake. The Mishnah says silk and wool or silk and linen is not allowed to be woven together because Marasayim, people are going to think that you're weaving shatnas together. The Rush says, in our generation, the Rush lives in Germany. He says, we're all educated. You show me five different fabrics, I know exactly what's wool, what's linen, what's cotton. I can see it right away. So no one's going to make a mistake. No one's going to look at this and say, oh, look, that person just wove these two things together and I'm fairly convinced that it's wool and linen. Nobody's going to think that. And therefore, he says, the rules would change when it comes to the laws of Maris Ayin based on the communal understandings at the time. That's what the Rush says, which is a very interesting concept that he basically gets rid of the din in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says explicitly that midrabbanan, you're not allowed to have wool and silk or cotton and silk. I forgot which one it was. You're not allowed to have these two things together because people are going to think you're doing something wrong. The Rush basically says that doesn't apply today because it's irrelevant. Everyone in our community knows the difference between the two of them and nobody will ever make a mistake. Nobody's going to confuse them. What you see from that comment to the Rush, and it's quoted the Halacha in Shulchan Aruch, is what you see from that is that Maris Ayin is based on the community that you live in and the standards. Like, what's a reasonable consideration? So, as an aside, Rav Asher Weiss once told me, so if that's true, that Maris Ayin only works based on reasonable consideration, right? So the Rush says, it's unreasonable today that people are going to mix up silk with anything else, so you have nothing to be concerned about. If that's the case, then you have to ask yourself the following question. The Mishnah says that they used to have a lishka, they used to have an office in the Beis HaMikdash, where they would have all the machzis hashekel was put into. So machzis hashekel was a communal fund. Once a year they used to take money from everybody, and that money was used to fund all of their karbanos for the year, all the sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash for the whole year. That's what they would do. Now, somebody had to go in and count up how much money was there, in order that we should know how much money we need, how much money we have, what are we left with, what are we still deficient. So they used to send the coin in to count up the money. Now, what kind of coin do you think they chose to have this job? They didn't pick some high school dropout who's up to no good. They probably chose a very upstanding person who's very mature and who we know that we can trust, was going to go into this room and was going to make sure that he did the accounting properly. Okay, fine. That's the Kohen they chose. However, the Mishnah says, even though that's the Kohen they chose, the Mishnah says that when he goes in, he's not allowed to wear shoes or sandals. He's not allowed to have any pockets on any of his clothing. He can't even have a hem on the bottom of his pants or his jacket. Goes so far as to say, he's not allowed to wear his tefillin. Not allowed to wear his tefillin. Why not? So the Mishnah says, because we're concerned, maybe someone's going to, we don't really think he's going to steal, but maybe someone's going to think that he's going in and sticking money into some of the crevices in his clothing, or maybe he's even sticking it into his tefillin. Now, how is he going to stick money into his tefillin? How is he going to do that? It means he has to take out the parshios in the tefillin. He then has to replace them with a couple of coins in there. And how much money do you think he's going to fit in already? How much money can he put in his tefillin? And because of that, we say, because some nut job is going to walk away and say, look at this guy, he became rich, and I know it's not because of the investment that he did, I know it's because he stole a couple of coins from the Beis HaMikdash, and he stuffed it into his tefillin that day when he went in to count the money. Come on. It's ridiculous. Does that make sense to anyone? That's Mara Zion? I have to worry about that? If the Rush just told me that Mara Zion has to be something that's reasonable, and as a result of that, the Rush said, we undo the din of the Mishnah, which is, I'm totally digressing here, I'm sorry, but it was a great question. If I'm saying that I have to totally undo the din of the Mishnah, which is that silk is problematic, and nowadays the Rush says silk is no longer a problem, we all know the difference between silk and linen and silk and cotton, so then why do I have to be concerned there? What's my concern? Is that a reasonable consideration that someone's going to think that maybe he stole money? And even if he stole money, how much do you think he took already? And even if he's taking money, okay, I understand, he shouldn't have pockets, but tefillin? He's not a weird, like, who's going to stuff things into the tefillin? So by the way, that's not such a good argument. I was once giving a shiur somewhere, and I said this thing, and a guy came over to me afterward, and he said, I just want you to know, one of my friends was once arrested. I said, you have horrible friends, that he was arrested for this. But he said, basically, one of his friends was arrested, that on his way to Israel, he did stuff drugs into his tefillin. So I guess it is a consideration. So my whole argument is off here. But there's a reason why that was on the news, because that's not the norm. And I think most of us who would see somebody walking through an airport with a pair of tefillin would not assume that maybe we have to check inside because maybe there's drugs stuck inside of it. I assume that would not be the knee-jerk reaction that we would have about the person going in with his tefillin on his head. Okay, so why do I have to be concerned there? So Rav Asher Weiss said the answer is, because although it's true when it comes to Maris Ayin, that you only have to be worried about reasonable thoughts that people are going to have or reasonable consideration, when a person is entrusted with a communal position, when I'm entrusted by the community to do a particular job, you have to go to the extreme to show that you are not involved in any impropriety at all. And even though it's something that's so much to the extreme and beyond anyone's wildest imagination, but I have to be mindful of that. If you're entrusted by the community, you need to realize that people are scrutinizing you, people are watching you, people are judging you, and you need to go to the extreme to show that you are doing everything above board. And I think that that's a very, very important lesson to learn from a very simple question that you asked about Hilchos Shabbos. But you know, the Torah says, Hafoch ba v'hafoch ba dekula ba. Everything somehow comes around, so you can learn something from anything. Yeah?
Also, from the topic of Maris Ayin and Chashad. So, I was thinking about this recently. Is there a combination of Maris Ayin and Chashad for Bina Adam Chavir? Let's say they do something, nothing against another person, but it could seem that I have like something against them. Would that be, that's clearly not having nice good midos and there's and not doing the Abdul Rafiq Moha, but is there an additional problem with Maris Ayin that they would feel that I have something against them?
Maris Ayin on Bein Adam or Chaver.
They're going to be shy at me that, oh, she doesn't like me.
Look, the whole